Yet again, we're talking about another tragic death in York Region. Impaired driving believed to be a factor in this one. Must be frustrating for police officers to keep warning they should find a safe ride home and then to come upon a scene like this. This crash happened on Yonge Street in Richmond Hill last night around 9:30 near Gamble Road. We got an update around noontime from York Regional Police about this one. A 44-year-old man was killed, his wife and 12-year-old son, both in hospital with serious injuries. It was a four-vehicle collision with one of the vehicles bursting into flames. York Regional Police Constable Laura Nicole says many people jumped in to help the victims.
Tragic situation all around. We're very grateful to those people who helped. I think it, again, certainly would have been a scary situation and something that would have been very shocking for people who actually were a witness to it. And, you know, obviously those people may require some supports, and we'd encourage them to get those supports.
Now, the driver of a Mercedes is facing six charges, including impaired driving, causing death. Now, this comes in an area where we've done story after story. I mean, there's been the tragic case of the Marco Muzzo crash. We did an in-depth study, several part series on impaired driving in York Region specifically. And police released now the names of people charged with impaired driving after every weekend. And yet, the message still doesn't get through. They must be beside themselves, trying to scream it from the rooftops, going, why do you keep doing this?
It's amazing the leaps and bounds we do year after year exponentially when it comes to technology, when it comes to culture, when it comes to convenience. But this is one of those enigmas, you know, wrapped in a riddle that we can't seem to crack. The drinking and driving. It doesn't matter if it's public safety blitzes. It doesn't matter if it's ticket blitzing. It doesn't matter, really. I mean, I'm at a loss for words. And Ken Shaw talked about it, and we heard it inside that clip that you just played from Laura Nicole, essentially saying, you know, the aftershock ring around an incident like this, where you have people rushing from their homes to try and help someone out. I have a brother-in-law who's been a volunteer firefighter for 25 years now. And just some of the things that he's seen trying to pull people from crashes. You know, his wife talks about the fact that he wakes up in the middle of the night. These things have long-term effects on people.
Oh, very much so.
You know?
And I've asked police, especially in York Region in the past, I'm just like, you know, how frustrated are you to keep seeing the same game played out, you know, week in, week out? And they, I know I talked to Constable Nicole's partner in the communications unit there, and he said he just... You know, we don't know what else we can do. We try different angles, different avenues to try and get the message sent home, but it just doesn't seem to work.
I think a challenge is, I mean, from working in the bar environment and seeing a lot of these people actually out consuming the alcohol, is a lot of people don't recognize that they're drunk, right? Like they, socially, they're like, yeah, like they're against drunk driving. I would never drunk drive and all that. But then they have a drink and they go, well, I'm not drunk, and they get behind. Or they're chronic, right? They're repeat. We hear that over and over again, that these are people who have actually lost their license and are still getting behind the wheel. So there needs to be something. I mean, have new car manufacturer put a breathalyzer in a car. Like, I would have no problem doing a breathalyzer. And yes, there are ways to get around that, absolutely. But that would potentially stop a lot, because frankly, the awareness campaigns, the fines, the changing of the legal apparatus are not doing anything to actually stop someone who's drunk from getting behind the wheel. And it's absolutely ludicrous.
If an insurance company offered me $50 off a month of my policy to put a breathalyzer in my car, I'd have no problem doing that. And I don't think most people would.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Just, you know, selfishly, just to save the $50.
Mm-hmm.
Make it incentivize not drinking and driving.
Because imagine if you genuinely thought, like, you'd be like, oh no, I've had two drinks, I'm okay. And you got behind, and most people got behind the wheel and it dinged and said, actually, you're not okay. I feel like most people would be like, oh shoot. Put the keys down, walk away. Not being like, oh, I'm still good, right? Like, I think that would be an awareness thing. Or the people who are really drunk and try to get in and be like, no, this is not starting.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. Like, because there's, like, you could tell people before they're drinking, when they're drinking, after they're drinking, so many times, and they're not. Like, the people are still going out and getting behind that wheel, where they know it or they want to or not, and it's still, people are dying at an absolutely ridiculous rate.
And it makes a difference, too. I mean, it's not like two drinks and you're drunk, or three drinks. Some people will take more because of their body mass index and you know, what you've had to eat and stuff like that. So you can't say, I go out and I have a couple drinks and I'm good to go, because that day you may not be good to
That's
go.
Right.
So I think it's, yeah, definitely something to look into moving forward, for sure.
Interesting that, you know, during the summer, when arguably it can be slow news for weeks at a time, that this radio station takes it upon themselves day after day after day to, if there's not news happening, we're going to create it.
Yeah.
As it happened last week on The Rush, and you guys following up today.
Exactly. It was a promise made by Toronto Mayor John Tory right here on this program to Ryan Doyle. John Tory promised to look into city rules around hiring people with criminal records. Of course, community advocates had suggested Toronto wasn't helping young people break the cycle of poverty and violence by not hiring those with criminal records. Well, News Talk 1010 has now confirmed that the city does not have a blanket policy to reject past convicts outright. They tell us they take into account what the recent offense was, and more importantly, what kind of crime. And obviously, if the job has to deal with kids or the elderly, the applicant would be scrutinized just a little bit closer. But what if they did want to have that blanket policy? Apparently, it would be okay.
The Human Rights Code says that you can discriminate on the basis of record of offenses for those offenses for which an employee has not received a pardon. So if they haven't received a pardon, then they're out of luck. And an employer can say, well, we don't trust you because you have a criminal offense.
Now, the labor lawyer we checked in with says even if they do receive a pardon, you can still bar them from some positions, and it's completely legal, according to the Human Rights Code. The mayor told The Rush last week about how one job can help break that cycle, especially if it's just a one-time criminal. They've got a criminal record hanging over them. You give them a job, give them a step up, and hopefully it breaks that cycle and they start becoming a productive member of society.
It was interesting how quickly, you know, people sort of jumped on this today, Trevor, on the text board at 71010, that there's just this theory of one and done. That if you've committed a crime that, you know, in their eyes at least, that you're unemployable forever. And you wonder why people repeat offend.
Yeah. Well, you wonder why you get stuck in this circuit, in this sort of world where there's opportunities are no longer available to you. You make a mistake, and granted, some are more serious mistakes than others, and you get stuck in that, and there's no other pathway for you. And so I think, I mean, the city doesn't necessarily say, like, that it needs to be, as they've mentioned, like, it needs to be blanket, that everybody, no matter what, needs to have a pathway in here, but, like...
Yeah, exactly. You have to look at it on a case-by-case.
Exactly. I mean, and specifically if the city wants to do everything within their power to try to prevent violence in the city... And we recognize that this may be one of the many things that actually might contribute to reducing violence, then the city should step up and should be a leader in this.
Absolutely. I think that wholeheartedly. My question, though, I wonder, are people hypocrites? If you find out that, you know, somebody, maybe a janitor at your children's school or something like that, might have a criminal record, are you going to be as accepting of that position? I mean, even if, say, the crime is theft, and then they end up being a janitor at a school or something, an entry-level position to get them back in and, again, break that cycle. But would you feel the same way knowing that that person is working around your children?
I think you already said it. It's a case-by-case basis.
No.
And it depends on what it was.
Yeah,
right?
Obviously you're not going to let a convicted pedophile in to work with children. That just wouldn't be prudent. But, you know, I think I'd be okay with it if I found out that somebody working at the school was, you know, busted for theft 15 years ago and, you know, they'd pay their debt to society and they're just working away now trying to make a living like the rest of us. I don't think there's an issue with
that. But it's also a fair point for us to have that feeling, though, right? Like, to have that sort of bias or unconscious bias sort of raise up, I think it's fair. Like, we don't need to suppress that. I think it's fair for people to say, like, oh, I would double check. I would want to think about that a little bit, and then come to the point being like, okay, yeah, they got busted for shoplifting when they were 18 years old. They're now 36. Like, does that really sort of speak to who they are as a person
now?
Been
a long time.
Case in point as well, Trevor sitting here fresh out of surgery on Friday with a brand new cast from a Sea-Doo injury from 2 years ago. Would you ever get on the back of a Sea-Doo with that friend again?
No. And he's probably listening right now, and I will never.
Never, ever.
Yeah.
All right, let's continue with the mayor and throw in a dash to the premier.
Speaking of Toronto Mayor John Tory, he says the province's plan now to make municipalities pay a bigger share of public health and child care costs is better than what was proposed earlier this year, but he says they will still have an impact when it comes to budgets. Premier Doug Ford says the retroactive cuts may have been a little bit too much too soon, but...
We can't continue throwing money at the problem as our predecessors did into top-down big government schemes. That is neither compassionate or sustainable.
Ford says the not quite as harsh cuts will still be going ahead. They'll be starting on January 1st. So proposed cuts to ambulance services, for example, that will not happen. Instead, the budget will be increased moving forward, according to Premier Doug Ford. So there are significant changes after they took a step back, looked at the books, and now they're going to move forward on January 1st.
Is this the pattern here, Dave? You look at the autism file, you look at municipalities and cost reduction, and you know the Ford government essentially coming out and broad sweeping program statements and broad cuts and then saying, well, we're taking a step back.
There seems to be a very different tone coming from the Ford government, I've noticed. And included in that is the autism file. When Todd Smith announced that they were going to look at it in a different light, and a lot of the groups that we talked to said it seems to be a lot more accepting now of input from other areas. So I think initially they thought they had to rule with an iron fist and say, this is the way we're going to do it. We're going to make the cuts and we're going to, you know, save all the money. And then with all of the backlash that came, maybe that wasn't the best initial route to take. So now they are taking this sort of softer, more open tone.
Yeah, and you know what, Trevor, I'm all for it because it is an opportunity in instances like this. And I think you gain, even if you're not, you know, a hardcore conservative, if you look at a government, say, you know what, we're looking at something again, we might have jumped the gun, we might have acted too quickly, we might have acted too harshly, we're looking at it again and we're changing things around. That to me is a good look.
So yeah, so surprise, surprise, I take a bit of a different track on this.
Okay.
But like, I celebrate someone saying we didn't do it right the first time, we need to reassess and all that. But I'm not high-fiving someone for coming out and creating a cluster, you know what,
and then saying,
oh, you know what, we're not making as bad this time, and then like walk around and get let's celebrate that. Like, I'm sorry, you created this scandal. This did not exist before. You came out after the city budget was already made and completely mucked it up and created chaos. Now, because you're saying, oh, we were a bit too hasty the first time, I'm not going to come around and start like giving you a high five. Also, this isn't savings. The taxpayer will still have to pay for these programs. We still need these programs.
It comes from a different pot.
All it means now is this will be coming from the municipal pot. So you'll be paying for it through a different way. So we as taxpayers are not saving money. Doug Ford just gets to offload it from his books and say, look how much money we save. Well, no, I'm actually, Torontonians are still paying the same in the end. It's just that we're not paying for it through the province. We're now paying for it through the city.
Someone at 71010 wants to know if you meant cluster fudge. Yes.
Yes, that's exactly
what it was.
Love cluster fudge.
Giant clusters of fudge. The broken bits, they're always on sale at Bulk Barn. It's 6:15. Thank you, Jen. Welcome back to The Rush. Dave Bradley is here with his views on the news. I'm Jay Michaels. Trevor Mayo is here. And when you think of intimidating, when you think of people that cast a dark shadow over a room and make you feel like a shrinking violet, I think the name Andrew Scheer comes to mind.
Quite
a lot. And again, he's flexing his muscle when it comes to the Prime Minister.
Well, he is flexing his muscle. He's taking his request for an investigation into the SNC-Lavalin affair. He's taking it up a notch. He's now sent a letter to the RCMP commissioner asking them to use all resources at their disposal to see if Prime Minister Justin Trudeau broke the criminal code now for obstruction of justice.
The RCMP has their standard response about taking it under advisement and not making public comment. But what we found out on Friday was that Jordy Wilson-Raybould has acknowledged that she was contacted. She had some kind of preliminary questioning or discussions with the RCMP. So that's certainly a sign that they're taking it seriously.
Now, you'll remember the Federal Ethics Commissioner concluded Trudeau breached the Conflict of Interest Act by trying to help the engineering firm avoid criminal prosecution for alleged bribery in Libya. Trudeau's response to that report was that he was standing up for Canadian jobs. When asked about it again today in Quebec City, he gave a familiar response.
One of the things that a prime minister's responsibility is, and always is to stand up for jobs and to protect Canadians right across the country. Canadians, their families, retirees, that's something that is my job and that I will always do. I will do it in such a way that upholds the independence of our judicial system and the independence of our prosecutors.
So it sounds like that is going to be his talking point moving forward with regards to the SNC-Lavalin file. Nothing yet from the RCMP on if they have actually started an investigation.
It's your job, Dave, to gauge the public's interest in news stories when you put together a run. What's the level of interest you think, you know, perception-wise of the public to a story like this?
In this
one, do we still care?
I think there is a little... You know what? It's hard to say. It depends on your political stripe. If your political stripe is conservative, then yes, you do care. And you're going to keep hammering home the fact that Justin Trudeau was found to breach the Conflict of Interest Act. And yes, we should start an investigation. If you're liberal, then you're like, meh, big deal. Move on.
One of the stories that actually managed to sort of pierce my vacation shield, albeit at the very end of the vacation, was my wife and I having a discussion about Jody Wilson-Raybould when my wife said to me, wow, it's interesting that she had said all along, you know, she was this white knight standing up for injustice and saying, you know, that the RCMP had not contacted her. And all of a sudden, this many months later, well, maybe they did talk to me. Maybe they did talk to me. I misremembered. Well put, sir. Does that change anything for you, Trevor?
No, I've been saying for quite some time, let's give JWR the credit. She's a political shark. Like, she's a political player. She's not this naive person that just all of a sudden fell into these positions. She's a very, very smart, incredibly capable political actor. And so I never bought this woe is me type thing that people were sort of painting her as. I don't think it's accurate. I don't think it's fair because she's very smart, very, very capable. I mean, with this story right now, like, again, I will recognize my bias. I'm sort of over it. I've already made up my sort of determination on it. If there's really new facts in it, it could change. And I think a lot of people are, right? If people don't like Trudeau, they've landed where they are. Yeah. People like Trudeau, they've landed. And I think some people in between we'll see. And that's sort of what we're now starting to see with some of the poll numbers. I think with this, this is Andrew Scheer trying to come out, and have the tough guy alert ring the bell and sort of keep it going. I think it's a smart play for him politically.
But at what point does he get into the fatigue of it? If he keeps banging that drum.
Yeah. Oh, I think he's already started. You heard it in that clip. If you want to cue it up again, Drew, essentially the prime minister, Drew, do you want to just pull that? Oh, I'm sorry. You have that clip. My bad. First day back. You have that clip of the prime minister essentially starting to read a job list of jobs where he's essentially saying, we want to protect employees.
Yeah.
We want to protect seniors. We want to protect longshoremen. Yeah. We want to protect people that like lawn bowling. It kind of goes on and on and on.
Yeah, it does.
And that's the fatigue of the talking point, right? Because you've said the same thing so many times, you're just starting to add a little bit of ad libs to it.
Yeah, you're trying to make it interesting for yourself.
Fans of Leona Boyd.
As you're doing it. So I, you know what, give this a little while longer and it'll sort of fade from the fade from everybody's sort of
the RCMP thing is also not new, right? Like in terms of what we have, like that was something
he
that
called for it originally.
I know, so like cool. And so like, yeah. Like if it's happening, it's happening. We know they reached out to JWR in the spring. She had a bit of yes, no, recently about that, but we know that conversation. That wasn't new. This RCMP investigating, and they said at the time.
He had called for the investigation by the RCMP just sort of in a press conference. He's like, I think the RCMP should look into it. Now he sent a letter to the commissioner of the RCMP asking for it.
It's so tough.
I want to make sure we get the story in because it broke during the rush today, and that from one of our colleagues in British Columbia at the Vancouver Star.
Yeah, and police haven't given us any updates since they confirmed the two bodies found in Manitoba were those, in fact, of Briar Schmigelski and Cam McLeod. We know they were found with two guns, and the confirmed cause of death, police say they shot themselves. But those two who were on the run, suspected of murders in BC, have now new details out surrounding this case. The Vancouver Star reporting the fugitives left a video on their cell phone, apparently a last will and testament.
We're not sure exactly how long the video is in total, but about 30 seconds of it was shared with family members. And we know that within those 30 seconds, the two young men shared some information about what they would like to be done with their remains.
And that's Alex McKee from the Vancouver Star. She wouldn't say how the families reacted while watching that video. And police wouldn't even confirm the existence of it, saying they have committed to providing an update with regards to this investigation in a couple of weeks. So we sit and wait.
See, I hear that and I just get angry because I think to myself, you know, forget about I'm so sorry for what we've done and for what I've done to my family. It's no. I want burial by sea.
Yeah.
You know, listen, before I go off on too much of a tangent, let's try and squeeze this one in as well. The Cronut making a reappearance today.
Well,
must be seeing anytime.
Not necessarily the Cronut itself. But if you remember back in 2013, the Cronut burger disaster, about 150 people got sick after eating what was the big draw for food at the fair that year. It was the Cronut burger, a beef patty with two donut crusts. croissant pastries topped with maple bacon jam. Yeah, it turns out it was tainted. It wasn't good. Tainted with bacteria.
Tainted
people got sick. So Toronto Public Health, not taking any chances this year. Health inspectors, about 20 of them, have been working the booths at the CNE, making sure there's nothing suspect about the foods being offered.
The main point behind this is to ensure that not only are the visitors to the X able to enjoy a fun day and eat well, but to make sure that we minimize the risk of foodborne illness in the process of having that day out at the fair.
That's wow. Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Eileen Davila.
I want to get on the tilt-a-whirl with her. Sounds like just a barrel of fun.
She's the Medical Officer of Health.
I know.
She wants to make sure everything's on the up and up, so they're looking at everything from cross-contamination, so you don't have, non-cooked chicken dripping onto salads. Even possible rodents and bugs, cockroaches, they're checking to make sure everything is all clean. You'll be able to find the results of the inspection on the DineSafe website tonight.
They should also do a chronological a reverse order of lowest to highest as far as pricing goes. Yeah. So I think a lot of times you go to the scene and you're like, that looks so amazing. And then you go, $17.50.
Yeah, really?
Forget it.
Yeah.
I'll have the Tiny Tom.
Do you see they have spaghetti ice cream?
I saw that today.
You know what happens with spaghetti ice cream? It melts very quickly and becomes just a big blob of ice cream.
Okay.
You're stretching out into little strands of ice cream. Anyway.
Yeah, there does come a point where you officially run out of ideas for foods at the CNA.
That's true.
Although I do enjoy trying every single one of them. Dave McKee, thank you so much.
No, Dave Bradley.
Dave Bradley, thank you so much.
Welcome back, Jay.
All right, day one. Hey, man, at least I started screwing up at 6:30.
That's true.
I got that going for me today. All right, when we come back, have you ever had a bad accident doing something? And will it stop you from doing it again? Trevor. Details on that when the rush continues.